Last week, I talked a lot about how the six sense doors connect with the other four links we've done up to this point, and I'm not going to really go into a lot of that, but I do want to stress how important these links, these six sense doors are. And I had this thought cross my mind while I was sitting here. I remembered something that Thich Nhat Hanh said years ago. It used to be a koan of mine. It's not a real koan, but it used to be a koan for me because it did not make any sense to me in my understanding. But I read a quote by him where he said that in this present moment, you could change the past. And I remember over the years trying to understand what that would mean. He couldn't have meant it literally. You can't like change the past in the present moment. So I kept trying to think, he must have meant I would change my understanding of the past. Or maybe I would change my relationship with the past in this present moment. But the past is the past. But the more I begin to practice and the more I begin to understand practice as a whole, the more I understood what he meant. And I think he was pointing to a literal changing of the past. And I think it's the best way to begin to kind of put this in perspective is with these sense doors. Because these sense doors is the first opportunity that we have to have an effect on the four links previous. The four links, if you think about the four links that come before it, the ignorance, mental formations, the consciousness, and this name and form, those four links are almost hardwired in us. They are so impulsive that they speak before we even have a chance to do anything about it. They're already happening. As soon as we think we try to catch it, it's already happened. It's like trying to hear a sound and not think of it as a sound. I used to try this when we were at Soto with the trains going by. As soon as I would hear that sound, I would think light rail. And I would say, don't think light rail, Tori. Try not to think light rail. Just hear it as sound. But as soon as I heard that sound, I thought light rail. It would be my sit, my mantra, my object of meditation would be to see if I could hear a sound and not call it what it was before it would happen. It's just like it's forever. Almost impossible. You need to see that. You need to understand and see how hardwired these first four links are and make and have it be important to us to recognize how conditioned our way of existence is. It is hardwired conditioned so that the idea that we can step outside of conditioning. And that the Buddha would point to a liberation outside of that. It's almost as if that in and of itself seems impossible. It is as impossible as you would think, changing the past in this present moment. But what happens with our sense doors, what we can begin to see through the sense doors, to me, is a way that you can see your understanding of the sense doors in the moment that you're having that understanding flips the switch on the habits that come after that. It actually flips the switch on the habits that were before. So you can have an effect on the previous links in the present moment, right now, because the way those links are set up, is that whatever you did before pushes into the present moment, and it forces you to go forward in the same continuous, habitual, conditioned way of being. But in a present moment, you have the possibility, we all do, have this possibility to become aware at a level that flips the switch in the past. It interrupts the future and it flips the switch in the past. And that starts at the sense doors. It's like the first opportunity we have. So one of the main things that I wanted to kind of point to, that one of the main things I pointed to last week, is that we have to start with this understanding of the mind as a sense door. Because as long as we look at the five sense doors plus the mind, but it's not really a sense door, it's the mind. And we somehow keep it separate from the other sense doors, we do ourselves a disservice, because it is a sense door and we don't react to it the same way that we react to the other sense doors. So I was mentioning that we don't really consider the experiences that we have with the other sense doors as us. We think of, if I see a tree, I don't think I'm the tree. I think I'm seeing an object outside of me. I'm seeing a tree. If I hear a car sound, I don't think I'm the sound. And we could go through all our sense doors. We never think of them as me, these traditional five sense doors. But by bringing in the mind as a sense door, the Buddha changed the game. He changed the landscape of what's possible for us, because we think what we think is us. What we believe that my thinking is me. And so whatever comes in as information in through the mind, we have a distorted, warped view of that and don't hold it with the same degree of detachment that we can have with the other sense doors. So once we begin to rethink this way, change our understanding of the mind as a sense door, it's a game changer as to how we can begin to relate to ourselves. Here's another way to think about it. With the other sense doors, you know, just practicing around it, and many of you that have been on retreats, you've seen this. You can begin to see how inconsistent these sense doors are. You can see them as ever-changing, impermanent. You can see how the mind is constant, or not the mind, but you can see how your awareness of seeing or tasting is always interrupted and changed, and it doesn't stay. How hard it is even to keep your the felt sense of the breath connected to that felt sense of the breath. That constant change and flux, we can see that in the other sense doors. And because we can see that, we can begin to get a deeper understanding of impermanence, of change, and the nature of change, and the real existence of constant change. We can see that and get a feel for it when we look at these other sense doors, when we begin to notice how sound does not stay continuous. It comes and goes, and it has nothing to do with us. We can begin to see how what the eyes pick up and see in the light and the shadow has nothing to do with us. We can actually connect with this on a dynamic level. So we get a strong understanding of impermanence. But the mind is equally inconsistent and constant. It's always flowing, changing. And if we don't see it as a sense door, we don't get to see non-self as vividly as it's possible if you begin to see the mind as a sense door. Not you, it is a sense door where data comes in. And that impermanence that you begin to notice about the mind's constant taking in data points to non-self. It points to the wisdom that is held by seeing this non-self experience. We get less identified when you see, when you hear sound coming and going, and it's not, you don't have any control over it. You lose that sense of identification with it. You lose the need to control everything. When you try to taste some orange and you can't seem to separate the thought of the orange from the orange itself, you can begin to get a sense of how little this is controlled by you and the possibility of not being identified becomes much more real. These are not concepts. These become real when you use the sense doors as a vehicle to begin to see how little control you have over things, how little identified you are. But if we don't include the mind in that, then we are forever getting caught in the mind's identification, in the information that comes in through the mind. And we stay identified with all of the mind's thoughts, however they come. One last other one. With the other sense doors, we don't have this sense of, oh, seeing is a problem. I wish I could stop seeing. I wish I could stop hearing. Somehow I need the taste to go away because that's it. I've had enough of the tasting, smelling, all of that. We don't think that way. In fact, we don't think it's a problem that we see and we hear and we taste and we smell unless it actually goes away. Then we're like in a tizzy trying to figure out how to get it back. But with the mind, because we don't hold it as a sense door, we think it interrupts our practice. It's a problem. It needs to go away. Somehow the mind's got to stop all that thinking for me to be peaceful. But just like your eyes don't have to stop seeing for you to be peaceful, your ears don't have to stop hearing for you to be peaceful. You don't have to stop tasting or smelling for you to be peaceful. You don't have to stop thinking either for you to be peaceful. There's a level of peace that comes from the non-identification, from the non-connectedness of that thought that I am whatever I think. That's what we are looking for. So I have this poem to kind of help you see. It's by a person named Holly Hughes. The title of the poem is Mind Wanting More. And so they're explaining what it's like to have a mind wanting more. So they say, only a beige slat of sun above the horizon, like a shade pulled not quite down. Otherwise, clouds. Sea rippled here and there, birds reluctant to fly. The mind wants a shaft of sun to stir the gray porridge of clouds, an osprey to stitch sea to sky with its barred wings, some dramatic music, a symphony perhaps, or a Chinese gong. But the mind always wants more than it has. One more bright day of sun, one more clear night in bed with the moon, one more hour to get the words right, one more chance for the heart in hiding to emerge from its thicket of dried grasses, as if this quiet day with its tentative light weren't enough, as if joy weren't strewn all around. This is what we miss when we don't allow the mind to be a sense door. We get trapped in the mind's wanting more, as if it's telling us some great wisdom that if we had more, it would be a little bit better. But this is not true. It's just the mind's wanting. And if we could see it as a sense door, we could turn from it, just like we ignore all our senses. We could turn from it and actually see, pay attention to the other sense doors and notice the joy all around us. So these sense doors, they are the world. They are the thing that we call world. It's what we see, what we hear, what we taste. That's what tells us what's happening in the world. It's what tells us what the world is all about. So in some respects, one of the things we're going to talk more about in the next couple of weeks is this internal, external. We're going to talk about the practicing of all this in the second part of the month. But this beginning part is really, for me, just to get a general landscape of what we're dealing with here. So there's an internal and external aspect to all these sense doors, including the mind. The internal would be the medium by which the sensory data comes in. So there's an eye medium, an ear medium, a nose medium, a tongue medium, body medium, and what's called an intellect medium. This is it's not the ear or the mouth or, you know, the nose itself. That's an aspect of it, but primarily it is the fact that you can smell. It is the fact that you can hear, that you can see, that medium is picking up data on its own. I remember one time Greg Kramer, I was at a Inside Dialogue retreat, and Greg Kramer gave this incredible Dhamma talk on how sound waves come into the ear and turn into words. I mean, he was so exquisite and so detailed on the wavelengths and how they go and how it comes into the ear, because we think we're hearing something. You think you're hearing me talking. You think I'm actually talking. I think I'm talking because I feel like my mouth is moving and I'm talking, but it's not like that. And when you can let the sense doors just pick things up, you can begin to hear in a different way. I stopped listening to Rodney's talks, I don't know, years ago, probably when we were at Beth Shalom. Something occurred to me that Rodney was never really talking to my ears. He was talking to my heart, and that instead of me listening to him, I needed to feel into what he was saying. And some of the most archaic Dhamma talks that Rodney would give, a group of us, by the time we got to St. Mark's, a group of us used to meet up at this restaurant and have tea. Capitol Hill had this great tea restaurant. But anyway, that's all another story. But anyway, so we would meet afterwards to have tea and talk about Rodney's talks. And I could remember times when people were talking about, he didn't make any sense. I don't know what he was talking about, blah, blah, blah. And I would be sitting there having felt through the whole conversation, blown away by what Rodney was saying. I don't even remember the words. I just remember how I felt through the whole Dhamma talk. So there's a way in which our sense doors, the medians itself, is irrelevant. It's the idea that we can actually see that there's something about that that we can get excited about, alive about. There's the external, which is the objects that these sense doors pick up. So there's the form, there's sound, there's aroma, flavor. Tactile is what it's called for the body. And for the sensory touch, and idea is what it's called for the mind. I like this idea. That's how we connect. There's a sense of, there's an idea that gets that's brought through the mind and thought. All of this has a level of consciousness with each one of these doors. So consciously, the eye is aware that it's seeing. We may not be aware, but the eye is aware that there is something to be picked up on. And then finally, there's this contact. Contact that's happening, not the contact that we're going to talk about next month, but the contact that the eye is picking up that we don't even know that contact has occurred. The fact that the eye can pick up something. So what I like to try to call that is the felt sense experience of each one of these sense doors. We're going to talk more about that as part of practice, but I'm just throwing it out there that each one of these sense doors have a felt sense experience. And when we learn to connect to the felt sense of it, it can open our eyes. I got a poem for that. This is what I would consider the felt sense experience of sound. Or I guess it would be sound and sight. It's called Blackbirds by Julie Cadwalader Stobbs. They say, I am 52 years old and have spent truly the better part of my life out of doors. But yesterday, I heard a new sound above my head, a rustling, ruffling quietness in the spring air. And when I turned my face upward, I saw a flock of blackbirds rounding a curve I didn't know was there. And the sound was simply all those wings, all those feathers, against air, against gravity, and such a beautiful whining, the whole flock taking a long, wide turn, as if one body and one mind. How do they do that? If we lived only in human society, what a puny existence that would be. But instead, we live and move and have our being here, in this curving and soaring world that is not our own, so that when mercy and tenderness triumph in our lives, and when even more rarely we unite and move together towards a common good, we can think to ourselves, ah, yes, this is how it's meant to be. There's a way that I think they're pointing in this poem to this idea that if we let the sense doors, if we begin to treat these sense doors with a little more respect, open to their magic and the mystery of it, not just how does the eye work, but what is it that allows us to see? That's that's what becomes our kind of like our gift. So the Buddha, which we're going to go into more details, he wrote, there's a sutta about how he said practicing with this. And basically it is a lot of detail, 36 practices, 18 and 36. And there's all this division and how to look at it. And next week, we're going to talk about just that. What are these 36 practices and how do you begin to work with them? So for now, I just want to point us to one of the things that I want to kind of emphasize for this month is this not knowing our sense doors are happening. That is the trick here. We've been sitting here looking, seeing through the eyes, hearing, sensing. All these sense doors have been operating, but we don't actually pay attention to the doors themselves. We just get caught up in the objects that the doors actually point to. And so this not knowing, we don't really see or experience the sense doors as they really are. We don't, we're not actually realizing how conditioned things are. So we can't actually experience or get a realistic view of the first four links because those links are the push that comes forward through the sense doors. And the sense doors become our first opportunity to really kind of stop that flow, to change the past. We don't see in this not knowing, not being aware of the sense doors, we can't truly grasp the level of understanding that these sense doors can provide us. This capacity that the evaluation that's going to starting next month, when we hit contact and feeling tones and what's going to carry us into the future, it starts here at these sense doors. So instead of us paying attention to what these sense doors are doing, instead, we just get infatuated with attached, kind of caught up in the sense doors themselves, entangled, and that entanglement is what leads to future suffering. It's what leads to all the drawbacks that these sense doors have. We don't even know that they have drawbacks or that the drawbacks exist or that we even need to look for the drawbacks. Instead, we just think we're listening to a Dhamma talk by Tuareg, because I know I can see her. That's Tuareg giving this Dhamma talk. And we don't see that we're the captivation of it. And instead, we just get entangled. And that entanglement leads to greed, hatred, and delusion. And it leads to the further attachment, clinging, craving, everything we're going to end up running into. I think this is a good poem. No, I think I'm going to end with this other poem. So I'm just going to finish up here a little bit. I just want to say this final thing is that, I think these four links previous, they're hardwired. They're coming. They're happening. It's the nature of the mind and body and the humanness that we have. But the mindfulness is the thing that actually provides a stopgap and one of the first opportunities to be mindful is at the sense door. That our mindfulness, our practice into mindfulness with these sense doors actually can become the thing that prevents the flood into suffering from happening, because we begin to see the sense doors as not self, not me. These are just experiences this human body actually picks up. So let me end with this. It's called Midlife. This is another poem by Julie Cadwallader Stobbs. This is as far as the light of my understanding has carried me. An October morning, a canoe built by hand, a quiet current. Above me, the trees arc, green and golden against a cloudy sky. Below me, the river responds with perfect reflection. 100 feet deep, 100 feet high. To take a cup of this river, to drink its purple and gray, its golden and green, to see a bend in the river up ahead and still say yes. What I think this points to is, if you can see it, it's just the present moment right here. That's where she is. Just the present moment in this canoe, in this river, in October. But there's a bend up ahead, which is true. You don't know what's there, but that's where you're going. I think that's the way the sense doors are. If we can let them just be an experience of just this moment, we can try to cut away some of that sense of permanency. And if we cut away some of that sense of permanency, we create an opportunity for the future to be completely anew and not stuck in the same old patterns. So we'll take a moment here and be still, see if I can let the words, whatever that was, that sound, whoever said that, whoever gave that Dhamma talk, let that pass on by. Thank you for your kind attention. I want you to think about, I want you to share what your understanding is about the sense doors and whether or not this week or last week has inspired you to want to get to connect with these sense doors a little bit more. So this is really just about seeing if you're, how interested you are getting around these sense doors, because this is where we're going to change the rest of the year. So that's what I'd like you to talk about. Just share with each other on that. All right, here we go. So anybody have anything they want to share? Or if you needed to finish something, did you want to share it out loud with everybody? I'm going to take us all off mute so we can just speak freely. Susie?
I want to ask you something, because I was at something this weekend and I had this question, and I was unhappy with the teacher's response. And I think you would have I would like your creative mind and spirit, which relates to the sense doors. Because in our group, people were saying that it was like, we're talking about sight and sound, but not so much smell. The last speaker talked about how there seems to be more time between the information that comes in via the taste and smell. And I had this really powerful experience on the weekend where it wasn't different from all other experiences, but where I went outside and it was sort of stormy in Boston, the 50 degrees and tempestuous, this lovely, like almost like a November day in the fall. And I just had this great ache in my heart in that almost like simultaneous with it, which is longing for my father, who's still alive, but he's 95 and lives in England and doesn't have any more seasons. I don't know when the hell I'll be able to go and see him. And I was thinking, at what point, and then I felt so sad. And I love those smells, and I love the fragrances and the, you know, the wet on the grass and the tempestuous. And I thought, at what point, because that smell is so, lives so closely with memory, do we claim those senses, that sensory information for itself, like get the, and that's exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Like where it doesn't, we don't lose the connection in the moment just with the information. And it's of course for us who are so sensitive to our physical environment, nature, and smell being so redolent for us with memory. So
actually, Susie, I think what you're pointing to is exactly what I'm talking about, because yeah. As soon as you begin to think about your father, you got identified. See, because mm-hmm. the smells and the sight and all of that, we have an ability to be a little detached from it as an experience. But when we think, we get intertwined in it and we're caught up in that and we lose everything else. So what the Buddha was trying to show you is that actually it's all happening simultaneously. So that thought about your father could have brought that sadness regardless of what the outside was. The thought can just come just like the smell outside came, just like the, you see the like the felt sense of November, all of that just came. It didn't have anything to do with you. The mind's connection to that as an idea that it somehow relates to your father, that doesn't have anything to do with you either.
And well, the, it has to do with him taking us for hikes in the mountains. So,
the fact that your mind's decision that this equates to remembering my father, that has nothing to do with you. So what you could do is experience right. all practice. Of that at the same time. Do you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. How do I say it?
I mean, Tweri, the joy is as involuntary as the sadness. It's just a sequence, like genes.
That's
and
the right.
same.
Uh-huh. But what I'm pointing to is if you could let that sadness just be there mm-hmm. as a sense door, then you won't necessarily lose the other sense doors either, because they're all sense doors. But when we get caught in the mind as a non-sense door, we get caught in the mind and we ignore all the other sense doors. Because we're entangled, intertwined with the mind as a me. Mm-hmm. So even the way you described it, like all of a sudden I got sad and all, when you were describing everything else, it was, oh, there was a this out there, there was a this, there was a that, but then I got sad. And that distinction is what I mean that we do. And somehow if we could begin to see that the mind is a sense door also. So the thought arose, sadness arose, but it's not me. It's just this happened because this is the way the mind experienced this moment in time.
So it's not like an intervention. It's a witnessing of all those things
That's right. And it's all true. It's all true right then and there. But it could have been you looked at a 7-Eleven. And you saw, and your who knows why your mind would think about your dad, but you looked at the 7-Eleven and maybe you drove past the 7-Eleven, you think about your dad, and next thing you know, you're sad again. It's like, it's like that. It's like that.
That's right. All right, thank you. You got a better grade than the other teacher. and I won't name him, but he's famous for his neuro brain business.
Yeah. Okay.
That was really rich. Thank you.
Yeah, welcome. I'm glad you asked it, because that's what I'm trying to get people to, I'm trying to get us to see how different we hold the mind, but we don't have to.
Tweri, this is Melissa.
Hi, Melissa.
Hi. I understand that we can't control our thoughts, like we can't control the other senses, but we can control, or we can incline the mind, and we can make intentions. So it feels like we have more control. So I get caught up in that. Can you speak to that?
Yes, that's a good point there, Melissa, because we're talking about two different minds. And that's an important distinction to make. We talk about one mind. We say mind. And that mind, M-I-N-D, seems to represent the whole kit and caboodle, everything. From intellect all the way down to, you know, desire and intention. All of it is all interconnected to mind. But in Dhamma, it's better. Buddha never talked about consciousness like one thing. It was like three different layers here. So the mind I'm talking about that is part of the sense door is the mind that generates thoughts. It just generates thoughts the way eyes see. It's the aspect of the brain that allows for thoughts to be generated. And this idea of thoughts being generated comes because we have a brain that actually has the ability to cognize. And that's what it does, it cognizes. That is not the same mind that points towards inclining the mind for intention. That is the heart mind. That's the citta aspect of consciousness. And that aspect is what you could consider the felt sense of mind. It's what we're going to talk about next week. This is the way I would separate the two is, there's the felt sense of mind, which is the intention. And we can have the intention of greed, hatred, and delusion, and we can feel that greed. We can feel that pull into wanting something. And we can have a wholesome intention of, you know, goodwill for all beings. And we can feel that same kind of energy. So this inclining of the mind towards wholesome, towards right view and the right intentions, that is why I think the Buddha was pointing to that as part of the Eightfold Path. Because it is the capacity to have a felt sense relationship with mind. Mm. But that is not the same as the median that allows for thoughts to be generated. And that median that allows for thoughts to be generated is not of us. That's the part of mind. That's the part of mind as a sense door that we get entangled with. So like with Susie saying, I thought about my dad and it's because of what the weather is and we used to go hiking and all of this. We think that that is real, that that's true. This is what happened. This is what I did. But it could be anything that would get the mind to generate a thought. Just like we can smell something. Sometimes I can still, like there are certain smells that remind me, take me back to kindergarten. I think I'm going to sneeze here, but like the smell of paste. I don't even know if they use paste, but when I was a kid, they used paste and it had its own unique smell, almost like you want to sneak and eat it a little bit because it smells good. Like it's got to be food because it smells like this is something you should eat. But you would smell that, and immediately I would think back to grade school when we used paste and you'd have these big jars of it. Or you hear a song and all of a sudden you're somewhere else. The thing that the mind, the aspect of mind, that grasping mind, that part of mind, this is what we're getting to. The thought my father, the thought, oh, that's paste. That is fleeting. It doesn't stay. But we grasp it because we somehow have a different relationship with mind. We grasp it and the suffering flows from that. It's the same as last week when I was saying I heard the rain and I loved it. I got so entangled in this rain sound that I couldn't turn away from it. That grasping happens from these sense doors, and it's mostly connected to the wanting of pleasing, pleasant, and nice. And when the pleasing, pleasant, and nice is not there, we also get entangled by the fact that the wanting of the pleasing, the pleasant, and nice is not there. So the passing of the pleasing and the pleasant and the nice becomes as entangling as the pleasing itself. But it's all in relation to wanting things to be nice, pleasing, and pleasant. So that's the distinction. We're talking about two different minds. Two different, Buddha would say, I mean, I don't know if he would say this, but Buddha articulated it as three different levels of consciousness. So sometimes he's talking about citta, sometimes he's talking about vijnana, and sometimes he's talking about pure awareness. So sometimes he talked about the mind as being this vast golden light, free and pure. And then sometimes he talked about it as all of these various mind states that come and go. And then sometimes he talks about it as the clinging, craving, kind of grasping aspect of it. But the mind states would also be part of this, the grasping aspect is when we get entangled with it. But the thought itself, the fact that we have intellect and thought comes, that consciousness is just part of the nature of mind. I think it would fall under the citta, which is like the mind states, that you just allow them to come and go and you don't get caught in them.
Thank you. That was very helpful.
Yeah, good. We probably have time for one more, if there's one more. If not, we will leave early. I hope you guys are inspired. Are you inspired to really
get up
with these sense doors? Good job. That's the whole point of it. Because this is it. I've heard a lot of students say, you know, they're just noticing all these terrible things and they're just having all this crap going on. And this is what happens when you start studying the dependent origination. It's not unusual that things don't start getting dramatic, because what's really actually happening is the mind and the heart are opening up. This citta, this heart mind is opening up, and you become more and more and more aware. And of course, we added to it because we have already covered the Four Noble Truths and the 10 Paramis. So we already opened the heart when we studied the 10 Paramis. And then we turned around and opened the doorway of the Four Noble Truths, getting into all the suffering. And then we come to dependent origination. It's no wonder that you can see so much. That's what the Dhamma does. But if you get caught in what you see, you're missing it. It's really more about getting excited about what you see. Like the woman who saw, heard the birds, and then turning and looking at that sound and getting excited about it. So that's a good sign. We're all excited about this. And then next week we'll talk about how to get more into practice. I do have a homework that I'm going to send Ken tonight, and he can post it up there with the last talk. All right?
Great.
All right. Well, we will see each other same bat time, same bat station next week. I might be dating myself. I'll see you guys next week then. Thank you so much for your practice.